Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Shakiba Shayani, who is the new president and CEO of the Guelph Chamber of Commerce. Shayani is still pretty new at the job, which she took up on September the 9th, 2019. It was 2 days before the federal election, during which the chamber would exert tremendous influence as the organizers of the main local debate, and it was 2 months before the start of the annual municipal budget process, during which the chamber president always presents. Talk about being thrown into the deep end. And now we come to another responsibility of the president of the Chamber of Commerce, which is answering annoying questions from the press. Getting to know the new head of the chamber is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, this podcast comes out in advance of the annual State of the City speech, which is a chance for the mayor of Guelph to address the business community about all the great things that are happening in the city that should, theoretically, enhance our business prospects. It's an example of the tight relationship that exists between the city as a political entity and the chamber, which represents the business interests of its members to create a more favorable condition to generate prosperity. Like in many communities, the Chamber of Commerce is a pretty big deal here in Guelph, and if you need any more proof about the overlap between chamber culture and political culture, keep in mind that the former head of the Guelph Chamber is Guelph's current Member of Parliament. But chamber business now falls to the responsibility of Shakiba Shayani, who actually doesn't come from a business background. Shayani has spent much of her working life in the nonprofit sector, and before taking over as head of the chamber, she spent 6 years as the director of community investment at the United Way, Guelph Wellington Dufferin. During that time, Shayani was a member of the chamber board. But it's an interesting message that the chamber might be trying to send in hiring Shayani, that the business of business, at least in Guelph, is not all about making a profit. When looking at it in those terms, it teed up what might be an interesting conversation with the new face of what might be a new Chamber of Commerce. And there is so much to talk about. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we talked to Shakiba Shayani about why she wanted the job as the new Chamber President and CEO, and what she brings to that job that's different from her predecessors. We also talk about what makes the Guelph economy, how that's changing, and what there might be going on in the next couple of years here in the Royal City on the business end. On the political side of things, we discuss the role of the chamber in the discourse, their relationship with City Hall, and what the chamber's role in issues like transportation and poverty is. And finally, we will look at the current business picture in Guelph by looking at the underappreciated aspect of city business and where we might need some improvement. So I caught up with Shakiba Shayani last week in studio. Shakiba Shayani, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Okay. Well, we'll see. But I guess, first of all, like, how's it been going so far? You've been at it for a couple of months. 5 months, I want to say.
Something like that in September. So it feels like a lifetime ago, but also like yesterday. So yeah, I started first week of September, and it's been, like I was saying earlier, fast and furious. A lot of fun, a lot of great community support, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it so far. So
5 months in Guelph is a lifetime. it's so I guess, you know, coming into this job, it's a pretty big position. I mean, people who may not understand fully the role of the Chamber of Commerce understands that it contains a particular importance in the city. So what made you want to seek that out and take on the role of Chamber President and CEO?
Sure. So speaking of a lifetime in Guelph, I am a Guelphie through and through, a townie, as they say, kindergarten right through university here in the city. And that definitely grew my passion for community and the importance and significance of community. And so at the University of Guelph, I studied political science and public policy. Because of that, I pursued international development to kind of dive deeper into what it means and how it means to build community. And then I spent many years working for different not-for-profits, and then most recently with United Way. And it wasn't until I sat on the board of the Guelph Chamber of Commerce that I really understood what it meant to be connected and doing community development work through business. And it was my experience there as a board member that really got me excited about the opportunity and potential of being with the organization. And so when the opportunity arose, I jumped in and yeah, I haven't looked back.
So how is it different, you know? This is a very pro-business role, and business can, you know, mean what what we want
it
to mean. But, you know, at the end of the day, you come from a background that's very much about not-for-profit.
Yep.
Businesses, of course, it's about profit.
Yes.
So is there a learning curve for you, or is that, is it just a matter of sort of how we look at how we handle business?
It is. I really do believe that it's about perspective and how you define business. Not-for-profit, social enterprise, those are all businesses. Also, the bottom line still matters. Revenue and expenses are still tracked. And arguably, and what I've learned more and more, which is very Guelph, is that businesses in Guelph also function with social purpose and are purpose-driven, even the most, you know, quote-unquote corporate or private sector types. So, yes, for sure, there's a bit of a learning curve. The way it is different is a different set of stakeholders that I'm working with, but we're still coming together to talk about important issues, to figure out how to work together collaboratively to solve them. And I have said time and time again that I believe that we need to remember that behind business are the people and owners and their employees and staff, all of whom need well-being and are residents of our city. So I do think it's a lot closer than some people think, the community development work and not-for-profit work. I mean, the Chamber of Commerce itself is a not-for-profit organization, and so there's a lot of crossover. And but I'm also learning a lot about taxes and regulations and trade and all of that, too. So it's pretty great.
There's a perception, I think, because I think when people hear business, they think of corporations, and they think of big corporations. They don't necessarily think of the part of it that the majority of businesses are small businesses.
And there's lots of data for our own community saying exactly that. Not only is the chamber membership majorly made up of this, but where we see growth, economic growth in the city of Guelph generally is in small business. And we mean small. It's under 10 employees, solo entrepreneurs that are growing and driving the economy here in our community. So they're also the majority of our membership. So a lot of people often think that an association or a membership driven organization like the Chamber only supports our biggest employers. And we certainly do make sure that big manufacturers, employers with lots of employees are receiving the supports they need. But we actually, our content is often best catered to a small business that's looking to grow and expand its network and to grow its business.
So how would we define the Guelph economy? And when you're out there and you're talking about what is the Guelph economy, how do you describe it?
It's growing and it's got a positive trajectory, which isn't necessarily the case everywhere regionally or nationally. It's often looked at as the kind of gold star around agri-food, clean tech, green economy. I think there's a lot of potential for Guelph to be leading edge. And when people talk about the future economy, I think Guelph is really well positioned to be able to uniquely bring innovation and creation, social good, into the typical corporate private sector conversations.
And in terms of, because I hear things like the innovation corridor and how Guelph is a part of that. And just for me personally, but I also think a lot of people in the community who sort of hear these sort of like markety buzzwords and think like, well, how does that affect me? I work, like, I don't know, I work down at the auto shop or I work down at the bookshop or something. It's, you know, how does that, you know, the things you're talking about, the aspirational things, sort of trickle down to the, you know, more street level?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's super fair. And arguably, we're all figuring that out. The innovation corridor really speaks to the idea and the notion that it doesn't necessarily matter what industry you're in, what sector you're in, and now no longer where you're located. You're able to participate in innovative business growth. And that means you're hopefully, and we're working towards advocating for, greater connectivity between, right, Toronto to KW is the corridor itself. There's a ton of, you know, our GDP is huge in that corridor. And it means that when you talk about things like research and innovation, AI, all those kind of buzzwords, it does and it will trickle down to the average person. It means working from home or working multiple jobs. It means working with technology that you haven't even heard about, or new innovations that come out of the U of G or Innovation Guelph that will directly impact the way employers function, around the way businesses function, how they hire, how they move people, and how they move goods. So it's all really relevant. It's just the beginning of that churn now. So I think people will continue to hear more and more about it and then understand it more and more as it actually becomes relatable to them.
Not to reinforce the fact, but again, you don't come from a business background. Yep. And it's difficult enough for people in business to sort of predict where things are going. Everything is so disruptive. Mm-hmm. Coming into this, again, not from not having a business background, do you think that maybe makes you, not that you aren't valuable as a person, but in terms of your perspective, is that maybe valuable for someone to come in and not have that background and is able to maybe better roll with the punches as opposed to someone who is, running their own business for 30 years and in one of those disruptive industries and is trying to, catch up to where the curve is? You're able to maybe parachute in a bit better is what I'm thinking.
And you're absolutely right. I'd argue that... although a friendly reminder that every not-for-profit or other organization I've worked for is also a business. And so I've learned lots and I have lots of experience managing people, managing budgets, all of that. I'm surrounded by those private sector folks, are my board members, the membership themselves, the over 800 businesses are supportive and engaged and experts in the content. What I'm able to bring is a perspective around how do you solve issues with scarcity in mind? How do you bring multiple sectors, unusual suspects together to collaborate and to come to a solution and a direction to address something collaboratively and together? And I think that's where the typical, and I'm the corporate or private sector isn't used to necessarily doing is working less in silos. And where in the not-for-profit sector, it's much more common to bring people together around an issue. I'm able to help convene, facilitate, and then have the experts in the content that I may not have the background in together in a room to address the common issues. And because the issues and the difficulties and the struggle with disruption is common across sectors and across industries. So it's about how do we do something about it and go from there.
So is there more of a sharing attitude then amongst businesses now? Because just the typical sort of thing is, if you have something good, you don't want other people to sort of be aware of it. But what you're talking about is more collaborative, and I think our typical image of business.
It is, and people are really keen on it. I was just at a City of Guelph economic development strategy consultation, and I was really impressed with the amount of different the diversity in business leadership that was present in the room. And how eager everyone was to share their experiences, their difficulties, and their solutions on how to overcome challenges they're facing, and the willingness to say, hey, if you're thinking about doing that, could we think about doing it together? And that's, I think that is the way of the future for business and the economy.
So what does a day look like for you, in terms of, your daily responsibilities and the expectations and how this facilitation gets done? I mean, what does your 9-to-5 look like? Not that it's 9-to-5 for anyone anymore, but what is a day in the life of the president and CEO of the chamber entail?
So, it's filled with internal and external opportunities. So in the office, we're constantly organizing, planning, our own events and our own programming to deliver and execute on behalf of our membership. And then the thing to remember is that we don't just deliver and create content, we're asked for it as well. So I'm regularly asked to participate as a leader representing such a large network of business at external consultations, at different planning tables, at different events. Certainly, our advocacy work has me busy creating content and delivering that back and forth and almost being a broker between the business community and everyone else. Mm. And so a lot of meetings in and out of the office. It's a really a relationship-based position. It's about making sure I have strong ones with everyone in our community so that when something comes up, they know to look to the chamber as the leader that can do the facilitation and convening on issues, and we can you know, tap on individual shoulders and say, hey, we have something we need to get together about, or we have a minister coming to town. You know, big or small, it's the relationships that I build that will help us be successful. So, and then there's the day-to-day operations from HR to finance that require attention for an organization to be successful.
How many new people do you think you meet in a week?
A solid handful, if not more. And I mean, it gets easier over time, but at first it's nice to see you again. And now I'm putting names to faces. So, but you know what? It's my favorite part. It does take a lot of energy to be on and to be meeting people all the time. But it's my absolute favorite part of the job is creating new relationships and then running into them at the supermarket, because that's also very Guelph.
Right. Let's talk about the sort of political side of the job, because the timing of this was fortuitous that, you know, we have the State of the City coming up in a couple of weeks, and this is a very important event, an annual event for the chamber. Mm-hmm. So having the mayor come and talk to the members and sort of deliver, I mean, Cam doesn't do it formally. This last several ones, it's always been based on some sort of theme. Mm-hmm. But having this kind of, you know, formalized event, where the members hear from the mayor directly, what does that mean to the chamber and to the members?
It is a really meaningful opportunity for our members and the community and business community at large to come together, and the coming together piece, that connecting and convening part, is huge for us. It's about creating new relationships and connections for people, so that's a great event for that. But more than that, it's the opportunity and the mayor's platform to really set out his vision for the city, his plans for the next 12 months. And yes, he is very, he's less formal than perhaps other mayors might be, but what happens, I truly believe, is that the content is more relatable, it's palatable, people understand it, it's two ways, there's an opportunity for people to engage in the content and understand it, and it's entertaining, and it's a nice way to start the morning, and it's a really good way to get everyone onto a common and shared vision for what we're all moving towards. So we think it's an awesome opportunity to hear from the mayor, you know, kind of his directions and his goals and his strategies. And then we host a similar type event, which will be in the fall this year, with our Chief Administrative Officer, CAO Scott Stewart, and the DCAOs at the city as well. And the mayor will be present for that. And another opportunity, again, for the business community to come together and ask really poignant questions about what they're facing, what their challenges are, what they're seeing at the city, and how they could be involved in improving the community together.
I wonder what opening TV theme you'll parody this year. My fingers are crossed for The Sopranos, but I'm not sure he'd appreciate that message. But
no, you're right. Hopefully something a little more positive than that, but undoubtedly just as entertaining.
When he does it, you'll know it's his last year in office.
I just found out that we actually don't have a State of the City for the year we have elections, because on purpose, because it's kind of hold that platform for a mayor that's been in place.
Right. The thing I'm wondering about the State of the City too, and also the relationship between the chamber and City Hall, and you know, you see, just as a layperson, you can see that on social media, on Twitter, you see all the pictures and all the interactions. I guess maybe it's the journalistic sort of antagonism in me that, you know, institutions perhaps should not be buddy-buddy, but we are talking about two separate institutions, and you have to have a working relationship, of course, but is there any concern that, like, the day may come where, you know, the council may not represent the same end goals as the chamber necessarily, and that maybe that having that close of a relationship might not be as productive as having a more adversarial one?
Sure. No, that's a great question. It's not a concern to me. I think that building strong relationships, positive relationships, trusting relationships with everyone is key, and especially those in which you want to instill change. And with those that you want to move the needle on issues with, I find that if you're too adversarial, it just closes the door to the conversation. And the strong positive relationships that we have is actually quite fruitful. It makes it easy to say, look, we have a problem and we need to get together and talk about it, or just a heads up, we're going to come to council and we're going to disagree with the proposal or the idea that's come forward, and we'll tell you why. And then further, and we'll be happy to work with you in trying to come to a middle ground or a compromise on the issue. I think it depends on who the person is and the issue, but I know I personally am not concerned about having to stick up for our membership in the business community whenever needed in front of council.
It does also come to mind that there's a responsibility on your part as well, that there is sort of an outsized voice that the chamber has, not just because of the centrality of the Chamber of Commerce as a community organization, but also because of the weight of the local business community.
Absolutely. I mean, we have, like I said, a really diverse and a cross-section of business and industry. And we have, you know, all of our anchor institutions are members, from the University of Guelph to Linamar, but then certainly where the economic driver is in small business. And so when we come to the table, we bring a lot of weight and we bring a lot of credibility. And the city and all stakeholders know that it's important to work well with us, and vice versa, right? Again, it's not helpful to be adversarial, because in the end we'll be unable to make progress. And so far so good, but you never know what happens. I'm looking forward to all the challenges and all the successes that'll come.
Looking forward to being adversarial. I'm just kidding.
I know you'll be there causing really a scene, Adam. But we're pleased to work with you too.
Thank you. I try my best.
Someone has to, and I appreciate it. Honestly, it's important to keep people on their toes. It's important to challenge the status quo, and so it's good to have people like you around.
Well, I that does sort of lead nicely, because I was trying to challenge the status quo last week at the announcement about the electric buses. And I did want to ask about, I want to ask you about regional transit, but I did ask the Mr. Crawford, who was there representing the province, about regional transit too. I feel like this is like an aspect that is within the chamber wheelhouse, but it's not something that always makes the front page, as we might say. But in terms of like moving people across the region, because we were talking about an innovation corridor, which is a regional thing, that this seems rather key to the chamber's mission right now, and I'm wondering, are you doing any advocacy on your end or the chamber? How are you looking at it?
Sure, that's a great question. One of the top few difficulties and challenges businesses have right now is with workforce and talent, and retention and growth. And transportation is one of the number one difficulties in us making progress with that, and that's an infrastructure issue. And so it was a great question that you asked when everyone was at the podium, because really at the end of the day, you can't keep moving infrastructure challenges around. Someone has to step up and invest in it, and so it's good. And it is part of our kind of advocacy agenda. We're most formally connected with the Connect the Corridor coalition, made up of private, not-for-profit business organizations, as well as chambers across the Innovation Corridor. And we are we're so into it that we've all kind of contributed dollars and hired basically a third party to help us with our lobbying and advocacy. And so we're doing a lot of that work with Minister Mulrooney's office at the province, trying to advocate for two-way all-day go. And that'll be huge for Guelph, of course, in both directions. And then also with the city, we often get asked to give our feedback around master plan updates and that kind of thing. So not only is the regional mobility for people really important, but as you also know, the intercity mobility and connection is super key for our businesses and for people who are trying to get to and from work and to and from you know, daycare and school and all of that. So we are often asked about that feedback, and we provide it. At the budget delegation, transportation was one of those key items that we brought up specifically. You know, it is taxes going up is hard, but if it's for the services and results that are going to make a difference for business and people, we're all for it. And so I wanted to make that really clear.
And I'm sure you've encountered this a lot in your career, but I hear what you say, and I hear what, you know, again, Mr. Crawford at the announcement last week, like, we're looking at it. And I think it came up again when they were talking last week when they announced the Southwestern Ontario transportation plan. You know, we're looking at it, we're looking at it, we're looking at it. And it, and we're, like, where am I not seeing the gulf, you know, what like, in terms of laying the bridge to finally to cross the place from where we're looking at it to action? And I mean, and this is something that happens over a whole whack of issues, and not just a transit thing, but, you know, when do we make the leap? And, you know, are we getting closer? You know, just in looking into your experience and how things go from action to act, or proposal to action.
Right.
Yeah. Not to put you on the spot.
No, and it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And I empathize with the feeling that you're putting out there. And I'm sure listeners can feel it. But
yeah.
It takes leadership and commitment to make a proposal or an idea turn into action. And it takes a vision. And I understand the difficulty. It also takes investment, and that means having the capital to move projects forward. I wish that sometimes these decisions weren't as political as I think we know they are, and they were made in the best interest of business and community. But and I meant it when I said it's good to see that, you know, the Highway 7 expansion, the different transit infrastructure plans are in the plan. The plan is the first place. You don't want people shovel ready without a plan. So it is the first stop. But it would be great to feel a greater sense of urgency in that work and and timelines and scopes of work put out. So I'm nervous about whether or not or how quickly the plan will come to fruition, but it is a really good first step. Was that politically correct?
That seems fine. I just, you know, in terms of, like, making people feel urgency, like, people, not like, some people respond to urgency and take action. Some people respond to urgency by
avoiding.
Going into their shell, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so what's the difference between good urgency and bad urgency?
I mean, you would hope that it didn't have to be a dire situation or that there wasn't, like, economic collapse before someone felt like something needed to be done. I think what's important is framing what we're trying to achieve in a way that aligns with the plans and communications of any government or authority, so that our urgency as a community aligns with the urgency of the work and the platform of the government in power. And so we're doing that work, again, really intentionally with the Connect the Corridor Coalition and specifically in our conversations with ministers on the issue. It does in the end, you know, in the end, its power is with the people. If you get enough voices together on a platform saying the same thing, it's unavoidable. I think that is why the chamber does, like you said, hold some power. It's we represent a collective voice of, you know, close to 800 businesses and then all of our stakeholders and community partners too. So the louder people can be about the issues they're facing, and it's not just a cliche to say, write your member of parliament, your member of provincial parliament, it actually makes a difference because the more they hear about it and the more as a community we can come together on common issues, the more likely we are to see impact and plans turned into action.
Pressure works.
Shame works. influence works. And an agreement that we're in it together works. So,
another difficult thing I wanted to ask about was, and this is something that definitely affects your members downtown, issues of safety, issues of homelessness, issues of people with, you know, mental illnesses and drug addictions. what is the role of the chamber there? And not just like to, I'm not saying the chamber has to fix homelessness, but I mean, this is, I imagine, a very real problem with people who are members of the chamber in terms of like how they, you know, how what role they play in sort of helping people and creating, you know, more safety and security downtown.
Absolutely. No, it's a good question. And the first place I know the chamber has a role in playing and addressing in the issue is around education and awareness. Mm-hmm. And in being a team player with the other stakeholders, so the businesses themselves, with you know, our partner and member, the Downtown Business Association, and the work that they're leading with projects like Welcoming Streets. I think it's important to lead by example. And so, you know, driving our response and to people, individuals and businesses based out of compassion, mm-hmm. and an interest to support everybody is number one. And then it's about bringing people together. So, you know, if businesses want to come together to have a conversation that's solution driven and solution based, or with that in mind, we'd be happy to do that. We're often asked to promote, just recently, you know, the Guelph Community Health Center had a survey out around how their services have been impacting businesses downtown. You know, I was keen to push that forward to our network to make sure that people have their say. The Downtown Business Association currently has a survey out about community safety downtown and the perception of that, both the business lens and the general community lens. And so it's really important to us to make sure that the broader network has access to share their voice and opinions, and so that everyone's heard, so that we can find the best solution.
Mm-hmm. I do have to, I know you have to get back on the road, yeah. So I do want to let you go.
Perfect.
But before we do that, I do want to get into your job, which is a large part of your job, which is advocacy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pose this question with two parts. Part one is, what is a good business story that does not get told that you wish got told more? And then the reverse of that, what is a piece of what you're working on right now that, like, an area that you're, that's sort of like demanding your attention that you are trying to improve right now?
Oh, good questions. I mean, the business story that often goes untold generally is, to our earlier conversation and comment about what people believe business to be and what they believe big business to be. And the thing that I'm learning the most, and that's I think is incredible to see, is that, again, the businesses themselves and the people behind those big businesses too are community-minded and collaborative, are working really, really hard to keep business local. Mm-hmm. And so whenever they have concerns or whenever they flag issues around you know, even taxes or regulations, which some people think, oh, there's another business talking about something.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're well off, and why does it matter, and how could they not think of others? It's to, I would say, pause and reflect on what they're really saying, which is, how do we keep our business in business and competitive? Mm. How do we create better jobs for our staff and our employees? And so in that vein, you know, it's a real pleasure to work with those folks with, let's say, our MP Lloyd Longfield around a comprehensive tax system review or something like that. You know, our advocacy aligns with our values around integrity and excellence, and we want to make sure that businesses can achieve their goals. And so you don't realize that, you know, when Linamar is granted a $50 million grant, that they actually came to the table with $250 million of research and innovation dollars of their own to put on the table, to do better, to create more jobs, and to grow and expand their own business. And so we don't hear about the positive spin of business, the impact they're able to have on the community.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of your question?
Where can we improve? What's an area you're looking at to improve?
I want businesses to feel and work a little bit less siloed on the common issues and the common work, even. Mm-hmm. Even in the work that they do that's specific to their own industry, I think the way that people do business or the learnings or the impact they're able to then have in return to the community could be amplified if they did it together or at least talked about it together more regularly. So I definitely think that there's room for the chamber to bring businesses of different sizes and sectors together to see what they can do for the community and for their own business more effectively as a group. So not a lot of collaboration really happens, but every time it does, you can see the light bulbs go off in the room. So I think it's in our purview to bring people together more often and to show them how it can improve their bottom line and also have a social return on the community as well.
Is that like talking about things like transportation?
Yes, or housing affordability, or
recruitment,
and business growth generally. It's you don't need to do it by yourself, because if everyone's facing the same challenges, we're probably more likely to address it and create positive impact doing it together.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Shakiba Shayani, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. Hope to be back soon.
And once again, that was Shakiba Shayani, the president and CEO of the Guelph Chamber of Commerce. The next chamber event, as discussed, is the annual State of the City address on Friday, February 7th at the Guelph Delta Hotel and Conference Center. For ticket information, you can go to the Guelph Chamber's website at guelphchamber.com. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, you can go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or you can download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. Also, when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you'll get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. There is the Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.